All right. Welcome back to the Doomer Bloomer podcast with Will S. We are talking about the hero's journey and how to get back on the path of becoming from a doomer to a bloomer. We're talking to people who have been through the ringer of life and want to tell their stories, what they're working on. They're creators, not necessarily entrepreneurs. today on the podcast, we have a returning and well-known, well, let's call him a legend.
Oh, thanks, buddy.
So his name is Mike Messier. He's been on the podcast last year. You may remember he did 4 episodes for me last year when I was going through a bit of mental health stuff. Good friend of mine now. He lives in Jackson, Florida.
Jacksonville, yeah.
And Jacksonville, Florida. And he actually just wrote a new book. So let's just dive right into it, Mike. Let's talk about your book. How did that all start?
Well, thanks, Will. I appreciate it, buddy. This book actually started as a screenplay that I started writing way back in 2012. And I'm very happy for those that are watching the video version. I've got the hard copy in my very hands right now, and we can talk about that publishing process. But the book's available in hardcover, paperback, and Kindle on Amazon, Fight or Play Basketball by Mike Messier. And how it started, buddy, was 2012. I was in a writing group in Providence, Rhode Island. I lived in Providence for many years. I was in a writer's group. It was a good group. It was called the Writers of Wickedin. Probably the celebrity member, so to speak, that we had in our group was Carl Dupree, who wrote the movie Detroit Rock City, and he wrote 2 of the Hellraiser films. So Carl was in our group, great guy. A guy named Court Fisk was in it. A young lady named Rachelle Cook, Mark Keller. I'm just naming them because they were very instrumental in my writing. You know, for a period of almost 5 years, I think we met sometimes twice a month, sometimes once a month, you know, at stretches we'd meet every week. And we met at this coffee house called Cafe Zog. And at some point around 2012, I decided I was going to write a Rocky movie. I was going to write Rocky 7 is what I was calling it, because the last Rocky movie was Rocky Balboa at the time. And that was kind of what should have been numbered Rocky 6, right? So I was going to write Rocky 7, not knowing that somewhere else in the world, the gentleman was writing the Creed movies, you know, Creed 1 and 2. And when I started to write this Rocky 7 movie, I had a vision of kind of somewhat similar to how the new Rocky movies, the Creed movies came out, like Rocky as a trainer, you know what I mean? And I started writing about 3 pages of this Rocky 7, and then I said, man, I'd hate to write this entire screenplay and then realize it's never going to be made because I'm using copyrighted characters and, you know, Sylvester Stallone's never going to read it or whatever. So I actually went ahead and I used my resources, which anybody can do it. I just went to IMDb Pro, you know, Internet Movie Database Pro. You pay an annual fee for this information, and I found Sylvester Stallone's talent management. And I called them in Los Angeles and I left them a voice message. And I was very honest and I said, hey, I'm a screenwriter from Rhode Island. I don't have a budget for this, but I'm writing this proposed Rocky 7 movie. And I'm just asking that if I were to complete this screenplay and send it in to Sylvester Stallone, would he actually read it? And that's all I wanted to know. I'm not looking for a guarantee that he's going to make it, but will he at least read it if I go through the process of writing it? And Will, I was actually kind of happy that they called me back within a day, whoever it was, the manager or somebody sounded pretty official. And he said, hey, is there money for this movie? Is there financing involved? And I said, no, I'm just literally on page 3. And he said, well, if there's no money in this thing, probably better not to do it, you know? That's what he told me. And I took that to heart, and maybe I shouldn't have, but I did. And I said, well, I like, I'm not going to spend a year or 6 months or whatever writing a screenplay that's never going to be made. Let me take this seed of an idea and make it something else. And that's when I made Rocky an African-American man named Sweet Sugar Brown. Instead of being the world champion and fighting Clubber Lang or Apollo Creed, Sweet Sugar Brown's backstory is that he was a fighter from Providence, Rhode Island. He was kind of Providence's Muhammad Ali type in the 1970s. He was fighting a European champion in Providence for the title, and Sweet Sugar Brown kind of got screwed on a decision, which may or may not have had some racial undertones to that. And then so Sweet Sugar Brown is accomplished, but he's a little bit bitter because he never won the title. And he has a guy from Slovenia, Punch Pangora, who comes over from Slovenia, is looking to get his U.S. citizenship, and he feels that he, in order to get his U.S. citizenship, he's got to prove that he's the world champion in boxing. And in order to do that, he wants the tutelage of Sweet Sugar Brown. In the meantime, there's a woman, a single mom named Janet Trapp, who's downtown or in North Providence, Rhode Island, and her car gets broken into by a mugger, a thief. And the two boxing guys hear this commotion. They come over to rescue her. The three of them strike up a friendship. She is a single mom. She's only, 37. Sweet's about 60. Punch is about 25. And they both have an interest in her. And so there's kind of this machismo story of the two guys dueling for this woman's attention or affection. And in the meantime, through another kind of wrinkle in the story, Janet's son, Jack Scratch, who's actually kind of the lead character in this whole thing, Jack kind of comes to the forefront because he's a high school basketball star who's looking to get a basketball scholarship, hopefully to Providence College in Rhode Island. But he wants to figure out, who are these guys that are interested in my mother that are saving her from a mugger? Who are these guys that are interested in my mother saving her from a mugger? That's an interesting rhyme. And so Jack goes to the boxing gym, and when he discovers Jack, through the help of Punch and Sweet Sugar Brown, they discover that this kid's a natural boxer as well. He just has amazing hand speed. He's got a certain fearlessness to him. He doesn't have the experience because he's never boxed before, but he just takes to it naturally. And so, like any good protege, once the student arrives, you want to capitalize on that, because if you're the trainer or the manager of a young boxing champion, that's good for you as well. Once it gets back to Jack's basketball coach, Coach Steele, that Jack is now boxing, Coach Steele doesn't like that because they've got a big basketball game coming up. Jack is by far the best player on the team. The best player in Rhode Island, like the guy that has, college scouts already looking at him. And this boxing stuff can do nothing good for basketball. So that's why, and of course, Will, as you know, there's a big game at the end. There's a day where Jack has the big fight and the big game on the same day. And so the question for Jack to figure out is, what's more important, to fight or play basketball?
Yeah, I actually sped read it in the last 2 days, and I mean, I can honestly say that I didn't want to put it down. So, it's very well written. I found the characters are quite developed. So I mean, what my question is. Like, where, like, so you morphed it from a Rocky Balboa 7 right to a Providence Rhode Island. You basically turned it into your own work of fiction, right? Like, where do you find inspiration for your works? Like, what does everyday life, or is it your interest in boxing and athletics? What makes you want to get out of bed and because writing, like, I find writing hard, right, personally. So,
sure.
You said you started in 2012. did you just decide this year, this is the year I'm going to finish this book, just let's get it done sort of thing?
Well, just to clarify, 2012 is when I wrote the screenplay version. And the interesting thing is that the screenplay has won an award or two. It won New England, actually it's the Rhode Island International Film Festival Spotlight on New England category, first place screenplay. A couple of years ago, okay. It was a CineStory quarterfinalist. CineStory is a pretty big group out of California. It was a quarterfinalist as a TV pilot because I made a TV pilot for them specifically. And it's done well in some other screenplay contests. So this is the reason to write it as a book, which I really wrote it as a book in 2021 and 2022. So just last year. The reason to adapt it into a novel, and this is really reverse of how most things happen. Most people write a novel first, and then if it picks up steam, either they adapt it to a screenplay or somebody else does. You know, Lord of the Rings, everything else was a novel first, right? Well, I did the reverse of that. I wrote the screenplay first, and then here's the tough part about being a screenwriter, which other screenwriters will attest to this and feel my pain. You can write a great screenplay, and people can pat you on the back and tell you how great it is, and you can win some screenplay awards. But that doesn't necessarily mean your movie's going to get made at all. You know, and if it does get made, if you're lucky enough to have your movie made, it may not be made well. And I've experienced both of those sad outcomes in various other projects. So for me, when we experience this worldwide situation, as I like to call it, for the last couple of years, and there was a lot more time to be solitary and do some writing, I decided first just to really get going and start working on my books, my scripts into novels. And so here's A Distance from Avalon, When the Dying and the Dead Reunite. I did that one first. That was a lot easier because it was shorter. With Fight or Play Basketball, I mean, just kind of knowing your own stories. Like I have about 12 screenplays I've written, and just knowing that Fight or Play Basketball is the one that most people like, you know, most people can't really argue with it and say this screenplay sucks or these characters are weird or I don't like, you know what I mean? It's not a profane story. There's some adult issues, but it's really a young adult story is what it comes down to. So people can't really argue with this book, you know, or they can't argue with the screenplay. So I used the Kindle Vella to really get in the weeds here of for people who like writing. Kindle Vella is this new thing from Amazon where you can write a story in episodes and release them to the public in episodic format. So you don't have to write a whole book in one sitting. Basically, you have to contribute 600 words or more for every episode. And once, you know, your book is finished, people can buy it with tokens. And tokens, if you're an Amazon Prime member, you get a bunch of tokens for free. And you use these tokens towards reading somebody's book in increments. So I did that first with Fight or Play Basketball. I did the incremental Kindle Vella thing. And then once it was done and kind of resting for a couple of months, I went back. And this is where the fun part began. I took all those episodes that I had written, and then I basically went through like that was like the first draft. Then I go back and I tweak it and I clean it up and I spell check and I grammar check and all that good stuff you've got to do to make it a more presentable novel for people. That's the long-winded story of it, you know? So yeah, that's the long-winded version of it. Oh, I should answer. Yeah. You know what? I don't mean to cut you off. Well, to answer your question more, that's the nuts and bolts. The creative side of it is, creatively, I think you probably were thinking more in terms of that question. The creative thing is, when I was a kid, there was a T-shirt that was circulating around for a while that I think a kid in my elementary school wore it. I think his name was Brian Hazard. He wore this T-shirt that said, "It is better to wrestle and lose than to play basketball and win." And so he was the first guy I saw wearing this T-shirt. It is better to wrestle and lose and to play basketball and win. And I was one, even when I was a kid, I'm thinking, is there really like a thing where wrestlers don't like basketball players, or like, you know what I mean? Is there a rivalry between these two sports? And I don't think there really is. I just think it's kind of, it was just a glib t-shirt that somebody put together. Like some, you know, wrestling enthusiast looks down on basketball because who knows why. But I started, and then there was another situation, I want to say in 1995, where the boxing champion Roy Jones Jr., who in 1995, he was like the best pound-for-pound boxer in the world. He's not really spoken of that way anymore, but before, you know, before Mayweather, Floyd Mayweather Jr., Roy Jones was the man, right? So he was so good that he had a fight on an HBO card one night on a Saturday night at like, you know, 10 o'clock Eastern was his fight. Well, that afternoon he played a basketball game for the United States Basketball League, which is like, you know, a second or third rank, you know, feeder league for the NBA. So he's playing technically a professional basketball game on a Saturday afternoon. And I'm assuming he took a shower and had something to eat. And then he goes to the arena to defend his boxing title. And I looked it up recently just because I reminded myself, wow, that's an interesting story. Because that's kind of what happens with Jack in my book. And, you know, Roy was able to win both contests. He was on the winning side of the basketball game, and he won his boxing match. So those are some seeds creatively. Yeah, some creative seeds that slipped in there. Some other stuff is like just like the single mom, you know, Janet Trapp. Here's a little thing, a kernel. I mean, I don't know exactly what I was thinking, but I one of my favorite TV sitcoms as a kid was Three's Company. And the two main characters were Jack and Janet, who were roommates. For this story, I ended up making Jack Scratch the name of the kid, you know, the 17, 18-year-old kid, and his mom is Janet. So just kind of get those names from the show Three's Company. The Slovenian boxer of Punch Bangora, I'm not really sure where I got that from, buddy. I think I literally Googled, like, Eastern European countries and just to find – for me, an obscure country that I knew nothing about, which was Slovenia, because I wanted Punch to be a mystery character. You know, like I wanted this boxer who is about 25 and he's looking for a better life, and he becomes Jack's friend, and he kind of becomes the romantic involvement for his mom, and he's struggling with his own citizenship. I wanted that guy to be a mystery. So making him a mystery by making him Slovenian, when I didn't really know much about Slovenia, seemed to be the way to go.
Well, yeah, I think out of all the characters, I think I like Punch the best. I don't know why I think I just resonated with the fact that he, you know, he's in a foreign country trying to get his papers. Maybe that's part of my own struggle right now. But yeah. Did you edit it all yourself, or did you have someone else look over and edit, did you have your own, what was your process for the editing
when I adapted it from a screenplay to the novel? You know, I will give credit to some people for the screenplay version. The screenplay version back in 2012, I remember there was a few people that I would send my scripts to, the writing group, the aforementioned writers group. And then my friend, Mary DeBerry, who's a great writer herself, she's up in New Hampshire. She was someone that I could always send different drafts of scripts to. In fact, I was looking through my old emails, and I used to send her like my scripts with like a contingency plan. In case I die, this is what I want you to do with my screenplays, which is pretty macabre, but I would do that. And she understood. But I think going forward 8 or 7 or 8 or 9 years, I really didn't have anyone, because I'm here in Jacksonville, Florida now, and most of my friends are still in New England. I didn't really have anyone that I wanted to hit up to kind of be my editor. I would say that my sister Nadine did the graphic design with the four pictures. The pictures, three of the four, were from a website that my sister uses, which I mentioned in the back of the book. And I'm just trying to remember. I want to get that website because you can use Unsplash. So the three pictures on the cover, the photographers are Jeffrey Earnhus, Talon de St. Croix, and the professional boxer is actually a real pro boxer named Louis Sylvester, and a guy named Chris Kendall took his picture. But I was able to use these photographs basically free of charge from Unsplash. And then my friend Jose Gonzalez contributed his photo for Sweet. So my sister Nadine, who's a great graphic designer, she did the cover.
Yeah, I was particularly drawn to the cover. Like I mean, I'm not a designer by any stretch of the imagination, but I like aesthetically, you know, it matches what's going on in the book. The only thing that I was like, I'm not knocking you at all, but the only thing I was a little bit confused about is there was a bit of a love interest with Jack there.
Yes.
And I'm just wondering, was that just like a little, I don't know, like a teaser, or what was that about?
Mindy Kim. Yeah. Mindy is a volleyball player that jogs early in the morning at Providence College campus, and Jack is allowed onto the campus, even though he's not a student there. He's still a high school student. So he's befriended Sal, the security guard, who lets Jack, shoot his basketball hoops before high school. And through a turn of events, he meets Mindy Kim, and she's a slightly older woman, because she's a college freshman and he's a high school senior. And there is some intrigue there, and there's even a moment when the story has gotten to the point where Jack is very frustrated that his mother appears to be dating either Punch or Sweet or both, and Jack kind of feels, or he does feel, hey, every time I get close to somebody, my mom kind of screws it up. And there's some reference early on that his mom had kind of even been dating or possibly dating his basketball coach the year before. And Jack feels like he's put out by that. Like every time he bonds with somebody, in this case, he's really thinking of Punch Mangora, who's become his de facto father figure or older brother figure in boxing. And his mom is playing, kind of kissy face with Punch. Well, Jack gets very frustrated by that because it's getting to be territorial. He wants those father's figures, but not necessarily to be with his mother. Because the fear, the risk, is that if their relationship doesn't work out, this guy's going to leave. And if you think about kids that have a stepfather, that does happen. There's a certain type of guy who's going to say he's a stepfather to a kid, and then him and the woman get divorced. A certain amount of guys will stay in contact with the child, even though officially they're not blood relatives. And officially, by the lay of the land, they're not even stepfather, stepson, or stepdaughter anymore. But a lot of guys are going to see that as an opportunity to bail. Let's be honest. So I think Jack, not having a father figure officially in his life, he's trying to find that father figure, which is really the subtext of this whole story. The subtext of this whole story is – go ahead.
I was just going to agree with you. Continue.
Yeah. It's just that's good. No, but basically, whether it's boxing or basketball or something else – what he's really looking for, and what a lot of guys are looking for, is dad's pat on the back. I mean, I think that's one. So there's two things that people are ultimately looking for beyond food and shelter and water and all that good stuff. You're looking for mommy's hug and daddy's pat on the back. And I think most people that I know, at least, more of us have gotten mommy's hug in one way or another than daddy's pat on the back. And Jack has plenty of mommy's hugs in this. I mean, mom is a real strong female character. But that absentee father issue that he's going through, he's seeking that father. So when, to get to your question, when he feels like his father figure of Punch might leave him if it doesn't work out between Punch and Janet, his mom, Jack bolts. And he finds himself at the local wiener joint where there happens to be a pack of college kids that happens to include Mindy, you know, the pretty girl from the college. And, you know, Mindy, being a young woman in her prime, she kind of takes Jack in perhaps for a couple of nights, which is, I did not go into the details of that, thinking this could, you know, be a story that's more like a young adult, you know, read by high school kids. I didn't want to get into the graphic details of Jack and Mindy behind closed doors, but it's up to the reader's imagination what exactly those two wild kids do. And at the end, you know, Mindy makes kind of a special cameo comeback towards the end of the book.
Yeah, no, I felt that. That was the, like, I think coming around to, like, that was the subtext that I was kind of getting at too, is the absentee, like, if it, the absentee father figure or lack of a father figure role. And then the other thing that I like, because, like, at least here in Canada, we don't have it as much, is the athletic scholarships, right? The, like, and cause the end, like, besides, like, cause there's the boxing match in the morning and, right. then there's the basketball game in the evening. And Jack, well, they basically foul out right at the very end, but they have all the prospective scouts, right? You know, this is a high pressure. Is that something that actually happens in Rhode Island? Like, you know, people are looking for kids to go on these athletic scholarships.
Not just Rhode Island, but the whole the entirety of the United States is, even kid. I mean, LeBron James was being scouted, I think, at the age of 14, if not 12. You know what I mean? Like, these colleges are so hungry to have the next big thing, because the more like, for instance, Providence College, that's in this book, they do play their big games at the Dunkin' Donuts Center, which is a 15,000 seat arena where the WWE does pro wrestling pay-per-views, and Vinny Pazienza, the boxer, used to fight there, and Kiss plays there. And that's where the college basketball team plays their bigger games. And they oftentimes sell out. That's just in Rhode Island, which is the smallest state in our country by far. So when you talk about Texas, you talk about Florida, the Carolinas, South Carolina, North Carolina, even places like Iowa, Indiana is huge for college basketball. College sports are big. There's something about the American culture that you want to, like what's big here is youth. You know, so basically people kind of long for their youth here in the United States. They want to keep their youth. Maybe it's a worldwide thing too. But the way that kind of manifests is a lot of people live vicariously through high school and college athletes. And there's a big group of people that prefer to watch college sports in the USA, like the NCAA men's basketball tournament, women's basketball tournament. College football games are huge. I mean, they get giant, some of the college football coaches here in the USA get more money when they're coaching college than if they go to the NFL. College sports and height and college is where the real money and excitement is, you know, and some of the corruption with things like boosters and stuff like that. But in order to get to that college level, they're scouting high school kids, and that is a reality.
Okay. This is where my brain goes, but would you think about writing a sequel?
Like, yeah, I did. You know, yeah, like, thanks.
Like the next stage or the next steps for Jack Scratch. Cause I mean, I got kind of attached to the character.
Well, thanks, man. That's great. So, that's good to hear. That's very encouraging. I would definitely think of, like, because the logical next step is Jack goes to college and what happens next, you know? And so, and some of the side characters as well, you know, I kind of left a hanging Chad, so to speak, with Sweet Sugar Brown. He had some health issues that weren't fully resolved by the end of the novel. There's also some questions. Punch Pangora, will he get his citizenship? Will he and Janet continue their kind of dating, or maybe not? Mindy Kim, the volleyball player, the love interest for Jack, she's definitely got a story. So I wouldn't mind writing another sequel, another Fight or Play Basketball story at all. In fact, kind of along those same terms, Will, the reason I put the subtitle on, Every Shot Counts, that subtitle came very last minute. In fact, it wasn't until my sister Nadine had done the cover and I was looking at it. I'm like, you know what? This needs something else. And whatever, for whatever reason, the Every Shot Counts subtitle or tagline came to me. So that being said, if there was a second Fight or Play Basketball book, it might be Fight or Play Basketball and then a different subtitle is what I'm saying. You know what I mean? So there's definitely some possibilities there.
Okay. Well, I mean, this is going to be streaming on my channel and your channel, Mike.
Great.
Is there anything else, I mean, that you'd like to talk about that I haven't mentioned so far?
Well, you know, the process of writing this book, you know, I would, as maybe as an encouragement to other writers out there, or potential writers, and even to yourself, Will, especially, if you do, see, here's the thing. I don't think, not you, you can have a great life and not be a writer. And I think sometimes people, you know, how do I put this? They want to be a writer, but yet they don't really enjoy it. So I kind of feel like if you don't want to be a writer, or if you don't enjoy the process, don't force yourself to do it. But if you do want to do it, if you do want to try it, I would really say that Kindle Vella is a great way to start, because it's literally no risk. Like, you're not paying any money at all. You know what I mean? As long as you, I think you just have to have an Amazon account or start a KDP Amazon account. You can get on there and you can try it. And you can, as long as you've written 600 words or more, that's your episode. And 600 words is a considerable amount to write. But if you, depending on who it is, it could take anywhere from an hour to 3 hours or 4 hours to write 600 words. But I would just give people that encouragement, because I know sometimes when we think of writing a novel or writing a book or even a feature film screenplay, people get intimidated by it. And they find an excuse not to do it. But if you break it down to that 600 words a day, that's how I was able to do this A Distance from Avalon book, which is available on Amazon. And that's how I was able to do the aforementioned Fight or Play Basketball. And yeah, that's it. And subscribe to Mike Messier YouTube channel. Your channel, of course, is great. I've been following a lot of your interviews, man, and I'm really happy and proud of you that you're sticking with it and getting a lot of good guests on here, so that's great. And well, that's about it. MikeMessier.com, as the hat says, if anyone wants to check out my stuff, and subscribe to Mike Messier YouTube channel. But yeah, I think that's about it for me.